overexpression of Parkinson's. And that's an area, I think, that needs research increasingly in future. Now, this is a very busy slide and sort of slightly highlights what we're trying to do. Here we have a clinical population. We are enriched by the Parkinson's UK tracking PD study and our own study of non-motor longitudinal study. We're collecting patients from all around the world. We've already got a sample of 1,000 patients, and we're following them up for 5 years, measuring all the non-motor symptoms to see how these symptoms progress, particularly the different phenotypes, because we are phenotyping them. Some are then going on to have special degrees of MRI to look at the cognitive functions. And in all, we're trying to get brain donation, because another huge problem with Parkinson's, or in fact in the field of neurodegeneration, is that diagnostic accuracy, in spite of all the claims, remains not very good. And you have to have, wherever possible, pathological confirmation of your diagnosis, particularly in these different phenotypes that we're describing. On the animal side, we are going into three different directions. We're going into a genetic model, transgenic models, which are expressing certain excessive genes, and seeing whether we can then correlate some of these non-motor symptoms with what we can see in animal models with problems of cholinergic function, noradrenergic function, serotonergic function. We're looking at primates here, marmosets with Peter's group, and these patients are, these animal models are being scanned with single-size scanners with these three ligands, which will measure again contributions to these various behavioral and other symptoms using serotonin, acetylcholine, noradrenaline binding. With the group in Aarhus, we are looking at a group of animals which have been specifically done for bred and developed for brain studies in a longitudinal fashion, known as the Göttingen mini pigs. These are very small pigs which have been made Parkinsonian by injection of a thing called UPS inhibitor into the intracerebrally. And in these patients, this particular ligand binds to a chemical called alpha-synuclein. Alpha-synuclein is the key to synucleinopathies, of which Parkinson's is one. So this will then allow us to see, if we follow these animal models up, as the condition progresses, if we follow the alpha-synuclein deposition as to where it is being deposited, and based on that deposition, what type of symptoms are those animals expressing. This particular ligand will bind to acetylcholine, so it'll look at cholinergic function, particularly in relation to behavior. And finally, this one will bind to glia, microglia, and look at inflammation, because there is a theory now that microglia in the brain and other areas are inflamed in Parkinson's due to a cause that's not understood, and this inflammation might be as much a reason for non-motor expression than motor expression. If that is so, anti-inflammatory treatment might be the key in future. So that's the sort of way we're trying to marry the clinical research, the endophenotyping of non-motor symptoms, with the animal model studies with various collaborators. And I want to end with this slide, really, to say that, so where have we come? I think we've gone the whole circle, but I think I've sort of, in my mind anyway, there is enough evidence to say that at the moment, just to call Parkinson's motor disorders wrong, it is inadequate, and I think it's very old-fashioned. Assessment must take into account non-motor symptoms, even though we have time constraints, we have targets, we have cuts, and so on and so forth. But we can't go away from it, because it's as integral to the care of Parkinson's as measuring tremor and rigidity. We can now stage Parkinson's by validated motor symptoms. Horn and Yard described that in the 60s, but we now have the non-motor burden system classification. With that, we can endophenotype. I can divide my patients. I can say, well, you've got the Park sleep phenotype. You're very likely to have sleep attacks. You should not be taking pramipexole, because that's going to make you fall asleep while driving. I can look at somebody and say, you've got Park fatigue phenotype. This is similar to chronic fatigue syndrome. We might try on this particular agent for you, and this is not sleepiness, etc. We have emerging biomarkers, as I've shown you some, with PET studies, which can be extended onto SPECT, and also possibly neuropeptides, such as orexin level measurement in those with bark sleep, with the sleep attack phenotype. And this will, I think, lead to the next step, which I very much hope, that the future of treatment of Parkinson, in my mind, is endotype-specific treatment packages. In other words, you have somebody who develops severe Parkinson pain, you will then address, classify that type of pain. If it's central pain, you go with an opiate. If it's fluctuation-related pain, you get with prolongation of the dopaminergic drug. Similarly, you have somebody with bark fatigue, you'll probably in future address that with a serotonergic drug, if the trials proves positive, that is. If you have somebody with severe depression, forms in the bark depression category, you subclassify depression. Richard Brown has already done that. There are three subtypes of depression in Parkinson's. If it's anxiety depression, you treat it in a different way to somebody who has major depression, for instance. And that, I think, will address quality of life of not just the people with Parkinson's, but also their carers. And I think that's the key. And that's what I think we need to be addressing and listen to in future. And here is a little paradigm. We have motor assessment, as I said, from unilateral disease to advanced disease. The non-motor assessment can be done in a matter of few minutes in the clinic by using the questionnaire. And if you want the scale, you can use that. You can use surrogate markers like DAT scans, for instance, or if you're in Germany or Austria, you can use the ultrasound scan, which shows increasing iron deposition in the Niagara sensitive marker of Parkinson's in some hands. And we need to take care of impulse control behavior problems with Parkinson's. And only then you complete the loop. And I think you come what is reasonably close to what could be considered as holistic care. And that can only come through listening to our therapists and our nurse specialists who have a particular role in this area and have actually advanced the non-motor assessment of Parkinson's in an enormous way. And because patients are often open with nurse specialists as well, particularly during the non-motor questionnaire, filling up, particularly discussing issues such as sexuality, for instance. And of course, listening to the patient is what we have to do, and that's what I think, in my mind, the patients have been telling us for a long time. So I'd like to thank various of my group and collaborators who helped me put together some of the work that I showed. Thank you for your attention.